Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you are just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big, big thanks to my last guest, Professor Howard Schwaber of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. If you missed that discussion, I'm going to ask you to find a few minutes to listen to it. Howard and I zoom way out on what is going on in the Trump administration. We take off the table the debate about whether or not a more conservative set of policies or liberal policies are good or bad for America. We take those debates off the table. What we look at is the bases for those policies, whether it is credible, whether that is predictable, whether it follows some of our most closely held values. We look at that in terms of American economic power and might, or whether or not we should expect a more and increasingly isolated United States. We look at that in foreign policy. We look at whether or not the Trump approach to foreign policy is actually going to increase our influence in the globe or decrease it, and thereby increase or decrease our national security. And lastly, we turn to what that looks like in domestic policy. Does the CDC have any credibility at all anymore? And do the representations of Trump administration attorneys in courtrooms deserve any presumption of good faith? The technical legal term is the presumption of regularity. And increasingly, and including earlier this week, one of the most conservative federal appeals courts in the land, the Fifth Circuit, stocked with Trump appointees from Trump 1.0, found that while certain factual assertions are presumptively given the idea that they're accurate, whether or not those presumptive factual assertions allow Donald Trump to impede upon individual rights in this country, well, that actually does get some judicial review. And Professor Schwaber summed up our analysis at the end of last hour by saying, when we look internationally, we're basically seeing a more diminished America, a less powerful, a less influential America, a less economically robust, a less secure America. But when we see those policies played out domestically, what we see is a crueler America, because in constitutional democracies, in a republic, the Constitution defines and protects individual rights from the very powers of government, most specifically executive branch government. And indeed, many folks, including many lawyers, think of our court system as a crucial check on the tyranny of the majority when it comes to the rights of minorities. And Professor Schwaber accurately pointed out that the two groups in this country that seem to be literally the bullseye on the target of the MAGA movement are immigrants and folks in the LGBTQIA community, most specifically our trans friends, family members, coworkers, and community members. And I'm so happy to be joined to help us explore this more by Abigail Swetz. Thank you for being here, Abigail. It's great to have you back on the show.
Delighted to be here with you. Would love to be here under different circumstances.
Yeah, boy, wouldn't we all. And folks, if you haven't heard from Abigail before, she is the executive director of FAIR Wisconsin, the oldest and largest LGBTQIA rights organization in the state. Happy to have you here. When we understand that, and let's just take a moment to reflect on that, I think most Americans would understand that we try to not provide rights to certain groups but not others in this country based on who we are as individuals. In other words, for lack of a better term, our demographic characteristics, what race we happen to be, what gender, where our parents might have been from, that we try to treat people equally under the law. But it seems to me that trans folks, especially the LGBTQIA community writ large, that the approach of this administration is, no, that group of people gets less rights. We're seeing increasing cruelty. Professor Schwaber mentioned the rhetoric around the tragic shooting last week in Minnesota. So I want to talk with you, Abigail, and I invite you to respond to those sort of introductory comments. But what we want to get into is how do we respect our community members who may live or believe or love differently than we do or identify differently, because we all deserve safety and respect in our communities. But I wanted to just give you the floor for just your thoughts in response to some of those comments.
Yeah, I would love to respond specifically to the cruelty aspect. So I actually think the last time I was on, we talked about the cruelty being the point, or if not with you, with many, many others.
Yes,
I've had that
conversation. It was me and many others, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. But when I think of this administration and the cruelty that they are not only allowing, but doing themselves, right? I think back to Trump 1.0, actually, for just a moment. And that is because in 2016, right after that election, I was a teacher at the time. I was teaching in middle school. I was a GSA advisor, so a Gender and Sexuality Alliance advisor. And the day after that election, I had to figure out what does one do in that moment? How do we hold each other in that moment? And that afternoon was a GSA meeting. And we did a circle. And I said, what do you need from each other right now? Because that was what we could control. And I'm bringing that up partly because one of the kids said, which I'll get to in a second, but also partly because what we can control right now is what we need and give to each other. And that is what I want to talk to you about today. Like, how can we support our LGBTQ plus families, members, our kids specifically in the rising tide of this authoritarian cruelty? And when I go back to that moment of that circle, what do we need from each other? I had a student say, all of 13 years old, I need a president who understands empathy. And I could not give her that in that moment. And we need to give her that someday. And in the meantime, we need to provide that leadership as everyday people, because we can each have that moment of empathy with each other in our everyday lives. I don't need a policy to tell me to be empathetic. I actually think that the policies that are cruel are telling me more to be empathetic. And so that's where I was really thinking of that. I was hoping to be able to talk to you today about, like, how can we support our LGBTQ plus community and our kids specifically in this moment? And empathy is where we start.
Absolutely. And I want us to get to the place today where we're talking specifically about how to have those conversations with folks. If you know, I don't know that my parents have ever knowingly, but they didn't realize that they were talking to someone who is trans. But if you are, you've got somebody in your workplace, your family, however, young people especially, what to do, how to have those conversations, how to show that empathy and support. And then secondarily, what we should be asking our public schools and our school systems. But as evidence of the very cruelty that we speak of, I would be remiss if I did not point out that when we think about rights and our Constitution's protections of individual rights, that is how we limit government power. You don't get to say a majority of people elected me, so I get to do whatever I want and strip rights from people willy-nilly. That is not how this works. Even if you very much disagree with how someone might love or identify or whatever it is, that's just not how constitutional democracies work. And the example that I want to give of this is the Justice Department's demands for private patient treatment information. These demands are expanding, and I want every single person that is listening to this discussion this afternoon to consider how you would feel if the federal government slapped a subpoena on a hospital that you were treated at, on your doctor's office, and demanded your most intimate details about your health care. I want you to think about that, because in this country, we're not supposed to give rights to some people and not to others based on who they are. And that is an indisputable fact that is occurring in this country at this point in time.
Actually, Maggie, could I speak to that for a second?
Of course,
when you're speaking
Abigail.
About like the rights that are sort of being being created into privileges because only a few are being able to access them versus the rights that we really are designed to have in a constitutional democracy. One of the things that comes back to me is it is all based on difference, right? Like it is based on people being different from each other. And that is what they're using as a tool to divide. And even when it comes to, because you're speaking specifically about healthcare data, even when it comes to healthcare data, these people who are doing this, I would say overreach, are attempting to do it based on difference that does not exist. Healthcare is healthcare. If it is care that helps a trans youth become the beautiful, awesome adult that they're going to someday be, that is healthcare. If there is healthcare that helps me have a mammogram that makes it possible for me to become the awesome adult later in my life, you know, because I'm 40 and I had my first one and now I'm going to be 50 someday and I will be an awesome adult because that was able to be accessed, that is healthcare. All healthcare is medically necessary, highly individualized, age appropriate, high quality. That applies to gender affirming care for youth. That applies to any kind of care. I know that my doctor treats me as an individual because there are parts of me that are different than parts of you. That is the point. We are all a little different, but this care, because it is just care, should not be targeted. And this data, because it is private healthcare data, should not be targeted either.
Thank you so much for that. I think sometimes that fundamental point when it comes to healthcare gets missed, whether or not we're talking about gender affirming care for whom, as well as reproductive healthcare. Healthcare is healthcare, and we have a right to make those decisions ourselves in consultation with our family, faith leaders, and individual doctors. And that should not be dictated by a bunch of out of touch, mostly millionaire, white heteronormative men sitting thousands of miles away from us and our consultations with our doctors and our doctor's offices. Shame on that. I want a quick little time check. Let's just start with the most basics. We've got a little bit over a minute left before we got to take care of some business. Abigail, how is it if someone has never interacted with a transgender person and they don't know what to say or do or how to ask a question about pronouns? What, just start us out with the most basic expression of empathy and respect for people who may be different from you or me in this way.
I always think about this specifically when it comes to kids, right? Because their kids are exploring and learning and sharing and they love to talk, right? And so my experience mostly with this has to do with LGBTQ plus kids in my classroom back in the day, right? And what it always boils down to is listening and love. And if you approach any conversation from a grounding response of love and of listening to what is being told to you, then you will always, always meet the moment. You might still make a mistake or two, but that grounding in love is what 100% will make it possible for even that mistake to be moved beyond. That's my very first and only advice. Everything else is just details.
Everything else is detail, respect, listening, and grounding in love. I'm going to share something that I heard on that very same topic from a very famous author when we return on the other side. I'm so privileged and humbled to be joined by Abigail Swetz, Executive Director of FAIR Wisconsin, Wisconsin's oldest and largest LGBTQIA rights group. This discussion of how do we protect folks in our communities because we all deserve safety continues on the other side. Stay tuned. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Friday. We've made it through another week. And while maybe you and I have made it through without a very direct attack on our safety and privacy, I guarantee you there's someone in your extended community, in your extended family, someone that you may know through work or your place of worship, who doesn't feel like they made it through this week with their safety and dignity being respected. And let's be clear here, every single person, no matter how they identify, no matter what their gender or race, deserves respect and safety in every community, in every state across this nation. And I'm talking today about how we support specifically trans folks in our communities, in our workplaces, and most importantly, in our schools with Abigail Swetz, the Executive Director of FAIR Wisconsin, Wisconsin's largest and oldest LGBTQIA plus rights organization. This is so important, Abigail, because the attacks are unrelenting, they are voluminous, and they are expanding, and they are putting very young kids, young adults, and adults at great, great risk of harm, whether that's an attempt at suicide or attacks by others in their community. The stripping of rights is never good in a democracy. And before the break, we were talking about how do you approach a conversation if you've never interacted, no, at least you don't know if you've ever interacted with a transgendered person, you may have and just didn't realize it. And what we talked about was just starting with respect and love and coming to the conversation from that frame of mind. And it reminded me when I was a very young person, I went and saw Maya Angelou speak before she passed away. And a question was asked of the audience, hey, I'm paraphrasing, hey, I'm not really good about these social justice issues and I don't know the right words to use. And how do I have this conversation with a Black person without offending someone? And her response was, don't let your unfamiliarity with the language prevent you from expressing love and acceptance or love and concern and respect. What she meant there was go ahead and have the conversation imperfectly. Don't let the fumbling around with language prevent you from having that important conversation and expressing support. And that people will hear, even if mm-hmm. your wording is wrong, the love and respect and humility for their lived experiences that you bring. And I hope people can hear that today, because none of us ever gets any of this right if we've never had those conversations before. Exactly right.
Right. And that's why it's so important to ground it in love and in the listening, right? Because if you're listening and you hear something and you have questions or you make a mistake or so on, it can be a continued conversation, right? Like, I'm never going to get it right every day either. And I know that I need to learn and I know that I need to listen and do it from a place of love. And that makes all those things possible, right? And it makes, most importantly, the next conversation possible and the next. And I think that's exciting, and it should be energizing in a lot of ways.
And it's interesting because I have struggled with using the right language or language of inclusion because it evolves. We understand these things differently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But what I've always tried to do is let folks in my life know if I get something wrong, tell me, because I want to know and I want to understand. And you can always trust that I will approach it with humility and openness to what your perspective or viewpoint and lived experience is. Because, again, I want to do better. If we can all do that with each other a little bit, even across the political spectrum, we'd all be so much better off. Let's focus on kids, Abigail.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of young people at grave risk right now. If there's a parent listening right now with a trans kid, what are some of the things that they want to be sure or hope for in the school environment for their kids? What should parents who want to be supportive of, maybe it's not their kid who's trans, but other kids in their school system, talk about this in the school context?
Absolutely. So when you go back to that listening, that grounded in love, it is you becoming a true supportive adult, right? You don't have to get everything right to be a supportive adult in someone's life. And we know from the research, having just one supportive adult that a child can identify, if that child is LGBTQ+, if that child is any child, makes a huge difference in the mental health and well-being of our children. Of course, being able to identify more than one is always, always better. So the reason I mention this is that they have to be able to find you. If you are a parent, a caregiver, and there are other children in your life as well, those children need to know who you are to find you. That's the identification is so important. Same thing in a school. Knowing who the supportive adults is key, not just that they are out there somewhere, but who they are is huge, right? And that is why doing things like a simple action of, hey, I'm wearing my You Are Love shirt today. I have those signs out in front of my yard in Green Bay. I cannot tell you how many people have thanked me for having them. That's how they identified that I'm a supportive adult. Yes. It can be simple. It can just be a start. It can be wearing a rainbow ribbon on your lanyard, right? It can be making sure you say, hello, children, instead of hello, boys and girls. And even just these little shifts, because it is always evolving, can make a huge difference. And that is huge, right? Having an individual who is supportive is amazing. It's also not enough, right? So the other thing that I think we need to keep in mind is that individuals are amazing. Policies and individuals are even better. So we should make sure that our school policies, and I would say even larger policies like from a legislature, include supportive policies and not just these antagonistic ones that are cutting away, right? So, you know, let's get gender identity added into our non-discrimination statute the way it always should have been. Let's make sure that a child can use the pronouns that they are asking to use and the name they are asking to use in a safe and supportive way. These things seem obvious to me, but I guess they aren't. So let's make them happen.
Abigail, will you come back very soon as the school year progresses and let's have this conversation again? A big, big thanks to Abigail Swetz, Executive Director of Fair Wisconsin, my friend and now yours. She'll be back real soon right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. You're going to want to stay tuned. We got Ask Maggie coming up next. Welcome back, everybody, and happy Friday to one and all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Friday. It is 5:30, and that means it is time for Ask Maggie, a fun little segment where you, the wonderful listeners, can ask me just about anything you'd like, whether we're talking about my favorite cars, my worst and most embarrassing haircuts, my favorite flavors of custard, and, oh yeah, politics and economics. Those questions are always welcome. You can zip those in on our text line, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Or anytime a question occurs to you, you can send that in to Ask Maggie, the email address askmaggie@civicmedia.us. That email again is askmaggie@civicmedia.us. And none of this segment is possible without my producing partner extraordinaire, my senior producer, Jamie Martinson. Welcome back to the show. Happy Friday, Jamie.
Thank you so much. I think I need to come on this segment more often. It's like flattery all over the place. I'll always take it on a Friday. Thank you for that.
Of course, my friend. This should be fun today. It's been busy news week.
It's been a busy news week. There's been a lot of those news dumps, as we like to call them, where all of a sudden you think you're going to get by unscathed in the day. And then all of a sudden, 5 o'clock rolls around and every news headline in the world is there for the taking. And it just makes for a really long night. Try not to doom scroll too much. That's like my one piece of advice.
I'm like included. My new rule is it like 10:30, set the phone down. because
no more blue light. They tell me that's bad for me. I'm not sure if RFK would understand that, but they tell me that's bad for me. I'm just going to throw that out there. No, we do have a good mix of questions today. So Cal, before we get started, you know, we've got to hear what this segment's all about. So go ahead and, play that intro.
It's time to get your questions answered Wisconsin style. Welcome to Ask Maggie, a rapid fire round from politics to pop culture. So buckle up, Buttercup. It's Ask Maggie, and we're about to take your questions at lightning speed.
I like to say not so much lightning speed, more like turtle pace, but it's good. We always have some good conversation.
Yeah, we try to constrain my answers to 30 or 60 seconds, and I usually blow right past that marker.
It's not even so much that. We both have stories that go with the questions, and there's things that we have to talk about. Sometimes you can't just wrap it up in a nice little bow. These things happen. You know,
that is correct.
That's what we're all about here. So we're going to start with a really easy one right off the bat, okay? And this comes to us from Leah, who is listening in the Wauwatosa area. So hello, Leah. Happy Friday. She wants to know, what is a good weekend movie? Saying that her and her husband need something to watch, any genre. They don't care. They like it all. They want to know if you have any recommendations for them, Maggie. So, Cal, because I think, oh, gosh, you're more of a reader, though, aren't you? Do you enjoy a good movie every now and then?
Oh yeah. I will do some movie binging. That is for sure.
All right. So let's give you 60 seconds for this one. All right. Cause maybe you'll have a few titles mixed in there. So 60 seconds, a good movie recommendation whenever you're ready.
All right. Well, I'm going to start with the basics, I have always been, especially in the summer, a fan of Jaws, the OG version that is good, good fun. The Usual Suspects is one of my favorite films. I think everybody needs to watch it. Just ignore the Kevin Spacey of it all, if you would, please. Other movies that I like to get into for, like, just a big old bowl of popcorn and a sit and watch on a weekend are some of the classic ones. Like, I was talking with Professor Schwaber today in a break about Citizen Kane, those great classic movies that don't seem to come up as getting promoted on our feeds. So any of those, you know, like the film reviews that have the best movies of all time. And I have to say, one of my all-time favorites, it's a little heavy, is Raging Bull. That, I mean, that is, I think, De Niro at, if not the apex of his acting abilities, like right up there. On the lighter side, I guess I shouldn't even say on the lighter side, but like Steel Magnolias, it's a lengthy movie and it's got like so many great actresses in it. I mean, you got Shirley MacLaine and Dolly Parton and Julia Roberts. It was a play first. It has a moral to it. It has great personal arcs. And I can also always, if you want like a series of films, I am obsessed with the Bourne Identity movies. I can watch all of those as well in a long sitting. So those are some of my favorite weekend movies.
Those are good. Those are good. See, and you go a little heavier. If I'm going to sit down for a weekend movie, we dub every Saturday night in our house documentary night because my husband's nerdy like that. Oh, he loves a good documentary.
I love a good documentary.
Yeah. Documentaries are great. Sometimes, though, you just want something a little lighthearted. And Documentary Saturday is not all it's cracked up to be.
Not always lighthearted documentaries. Like on the lighter side, you know, this is going to date me. I'm a huge John Hughes fan.
Oh, I was just going to say 80s movies. Come on now.
Absolutely. Like 16 Candles, yes. The Breakfast Club, for crying out loud. Brat that pack. One never gets old. St. Elmo's Fire. Give me some Ferris. I can basically say the lines.
Recite that. Yeah.
Yes.
The Goonies. That's the always Goonies. A fun one. The Goonies are always fun.
So good.
Three Men and a Baby, followed by Three Men and a Little Lady.
Steve Guttenberg. What happened to Steve Guttenberg?
He disappeared. He was in the movie with the robot, and all of a sudden, he just disappeared after Three Men and a Little Lady. It's a great movie. They're super fun, too.
They're very cute. Mrs. Doubtfire. I mean, there's a whole...
That's another good one. That's another good one. Anytime you have Molly Ringwald in a film, though, I'm probably going to be there. She was just the best in the 80s, wasn't she? She's adorable.
She's made some lesser known but very cool movies. I can't recall, of course, any of their titles off the top of my head, but in her adult career, she's also done some good work. I love
she's
that question.
Still very
That's
talented,
good fun.
Just in case you're wondering.
And a little talented. Political. She's a little political.
Yes, absolutely. And speaking of politics, we'll go with one that's a little bit more on the political side here. This comes to us from Tina in Eau Claire. She's listening on 93.5 The Tap. And she wants to know this question. Will the real Epstein documents ever see the actual light of day? I know they're trying, she says, thanks to Massey and Khanna, but will we actually ever see what's in them, not the redacted versions? It's a little heavier, and I'm glad she's coming to you for this one because I know you've been all over this. So we'll go 60 seconds on this one, Cal, when you're ready.
Yeah, the trouble with conspiracy theories and the whole QAnon of as it relates to Epstein is that the reality is these documents will never be released, at least likely in my lifetime, without redactions. And when you say the Epstein files, that includes all sorts of information that is specific to victims that describes particular acts that will never, ever, ever be released. In 200 years, it probably won't be released because of absolutely appropriate rules about how we protect victims in these cases. What's there? What are we getting that's redacted versus what's available? Are the redactions legit? you don't know unless you're standing on the inside of the DOJ. And that's, you know, congressional oversight. That's one of the challenges. Congress and its oversight powers are only as good as an administration's willingness to cooperate in good faith and provide that information. And that's just the congressional oversight piece of it that has nothing to say about what actually enters into the public sphere. So the term the Epstein files has been, I think, not particularly helpful to people's understanding of the nuances that are at play here. Are you talking about videotape depositions? Are you talking about interview transcripts? Interview transcripts from who? Who's doing the redactions? Who's reviewing the redactions? Is there a redaction log that explains why? I think there's a lot of different documentary evidence and investigatory materials, as well as the actual things that were confiscated from Epstein's properties. Those are all different types of things that are, quote unquote, within the Epstein files. So I think, you know, some of our dialogue would be helped by greater specificity. All of this to say, I think in the end, Jamie, I remain absolutely appalled by the level of about face 180 talking out of both sides of the mouth from nearly all of the MAGA universe, with the exception of, course, Representative Massey. And I don't like Representative Comer, but he has never stopped running around like a chicken with his head cut off, screaming about this stuff. Although this past week he was touting the DOJ's release of more like a huge amount of files, which were, again, things that were largely already publicly available and were so heavily redacted as to, like, I haven't read a headline in the last few days after that document dump. You talk about news dumps after that document dump where anybody's found anything that's new or headline making. And that, you know, it fuels conspiracies, right? Like, you can't see it, so you can't disprove it. Nobody knows. Right. And it allows people to just engage in gross speculation. What we do know, because Republicans have been caught on hot mic saying this, and because the call logs are out there, like, Donald Trump is technically in the Epstein files, right? Yes. He's on the flight logs. He's on the telephone call logs. We got the birthday greeting letter. Mm-hmm. I mean, so is Bill Clinton, admittedly so, but there you go.
You know, here's the thing. I guess this is where the whataboutism comes in for both parties. I know a lot of people who are like, release them. Let the chips fall. If you're on the list, you deserve whatever comes your way, especially after you listen to the survivors earlier this week on the steps of the Capitol. I mean, that is, you know, I don't care if you think these are a hoax. I don't care what you think. If you listen to these women, there is true pain in their voices. And that's what's important. And really, this goes back to, maybe if somebody would have just listened to the women all along, we wouldn't actually be sitting here in this mess with all of the speculation and all of the whataboutism. It would have probably come to an end if somebody would have just listened to the damn women a long time ago. Just well, saying.
and this, to me, the actual story about that is here is not just it is primarily, and we should be focused on the women that have survived
and are brave enough to tell these stories
and keep telling the world about what happened. But the other thing to me that is so important, and I've tried to emphasize this repeatedly, is the absolute impunity with which people at that level of wealth can operate. That is what makes it possible for that level of depraved criminality to occur. And it's what makes it possible for those people to get away with it, because they peddle influence in our government. And whether or not you want to blame Democrats or this administration for cover-ups and deal-making, the facts on Jeffrey Epstein and the sweetheart deal, he was cut by a Republican-appointed U.S. attorney who was then promoted by Donald Trump to become a cabinet secretary. That is indisputable. And what we should be concerned about are the billionaire overlords like Elon Musk and Jeffrey Epstein, who can get away with basically anything they choose, because apparently money is speech and corporations are people, which we all know not to be true. Thank you so much, Jamie. Thank you, listeners, for all your great questions. Stay tuned, everybody. We got Terry Barr coming up with what's good local and overlooked here in Wisconsin to close out this Friday afternoon here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, everybody out there across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Dawn, and happy Friday, y'all. We made it. Whew. Big, big thanks to my guest this afternoon, Professor Howard Schwaber, who spent the first hour of our program with me, helping us see the big, big, big picture about what's going on, followed up by the always amazing Abigail Sweats, the executive director of FAIR Wisconsin. Thanks so much for being with me, Abigail. Thanks to Jamie Martinson for a little bit of Ask Maggie. And now, big thanks to Terry Barr for joining me again for what is a very friendly and good Friday landing for what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. Welcome back, Terry.
We could always sing that part.
We should
you
just butt in.
Tell me. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got the good raspy voices, maybe,
we
you know,
do.
Little ladies rock action, but just impromptu style.
I love it. This one goes a little bit in that direction today. Ooh. Maggie. You know, sometimes when things happen, I think we all get that overwhelming feeling. What can I do about it? I'm just one person. Can I make a difference? Well, I recently met a mom. Her name is Marta Hansen, and she decided to use her voice to really make a difference in her community and across the state. So this Sun Prairie woman joined the Moms Demand Action Group. And she did this because she believes in fighting for public safety. And in particular, with all the kids going back to school, she really wants to bring attention to what we've been seeing with shootings at our schools. So I have a little bit of audio from her, and I want to share what she told me about why this is so important to her.
I decided that I had had enough, and I wanted to use my voice to change our gun laws and make our schools and public places safer places to be. And through this organization, I really learned a lot about truly how many tangible things we could be doing that we're just not doing. I want to be part of changing that and making our places safer and kids safer and everyone safer from gun violence. And, you know, I'm a musician and I write songs and I write songs that things that matter to me, and this matters to me a lot. All people and all kids are all our kids. We should be protecting all of them. Not just mine, but everyone's.
You could hear the emotion in her voice. Okay, so you heard her say she wrote a song. I have just a little piece of it to share with you. And I think what her idea is to get this song out there, to let other parents know that she sees them and feels them. And again, dropping off the kids to school, she said, is some of the hardest days that she has had. So here's a little sample of her song about school shootings. It's called Bang Bang.
Have a good day, bang bang. It won't happen. Not here, not us, not you. Bang bang. Every day, getting louder, getting closer.
So Maggie, just a sample of what one person is trying to do to make a difference in her community and across the state. And it's a message she just really wants to get out there. And I think I'm one of the first ones to be able to share this publicly. So I'm happy to do that.
Well, thank you so much, Terry. And thank you to, what is the lady's name that you interviewed again?
Marta Hansen is her name, she is from Sun Prairie.
Sun Prairie, Marta Hansen from Moms Demand Action. Sensible gun safety laws are obviously and indisputably essential to stopping this spate of school shootings and the idea that, you know, parents now, that this is an active part of their set of so many worries for their kids and anxieties, that we're losing kids in this state and in Minnesota, across the country, remains, I think, just a black mark on America's basic set of ideals, that we will provide safety and respect for all people so that you can succeed and be the person that you want to be in life. And right. That has to start with just making sure our kids are safe in school. And of course, mental health is part of that.
Yes.
But anybody who's, I mean, the idea that we're not able to enact the most common sense, 80%+ of mm-hmm. Americans agree with, just basic gun safety laws is not okay. Thank you so much, Marta Hansen.
Yes.
From Moms Demand Action out of Sun Prairie. It sounds like a beautiful song, Terry. Will you send me the whole track? Because
I would love to send it to you. And anyone listening, if you want to hear the whole song, it's on Spotify. You just have to look up Marta, M-A-R-T-A, Hansen, and you can hear the whole thing.
Thanks so much, Terry. I really appreciate you, my friend. You have a good weekend, and same to all of you. Yes, same to all of you listening. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together for our kids and our communities and sensible gun safety regulation. Take care, everyone.